Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In this hour, we're going to be speaking to a very special lady, someone who is truly living life with, well, I wouldn't say abandoned, but I would say passionately. Yes, passionately living her life and teaching others how to do the same. And for the next hour, I'd like to ask our audience to imagine what this might be, and with a little help from Catherine, who's here on the line with us, Catherine Miller. A person who is one of the most creatively passionate persons I know. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, wonderful. It's so good to have you here.
Oh my God, it's so great to be on with you guys today.
Yeah, so we thought we'd get into the passionate living aspect of things first, because that's how we met you, really.
It is.
Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about how you first knew us?
Yeah, we kind of met randomly through a mutual friend. I was publishing Holistic Health Journal at the time, and mm-hmm. we were just on the precipice of, we got pigeonholed with the name Holistic Health Journal.
Really? You had started a journal that Holistic, that sounds very official, like a major publication.
It was, absolutely. It was a very early resource in the Holistic Health Press marketplace. It was one of the first, in my experience.
Yeah, it was a joy to publish, and initially we started to explore integrative approaches to health and wellness, and then we quickly outgrew it. We were still covering that, but we were also covering relationships, family, and so much more, and we knew we needed to expand the title because we got pigeonholed with advertisers. We were just attracting those who were in the
holistic health world.
So, and we brainstormed. I think you guys were a part of that group.
Remember that?
We had the little brainstorming group, and we came up with passionate, and then passionate living, and I think, son, you might have even said, that's it.
Seriously, we played that much of a role in this. Wow.
Absolutely, and we went out with you and shot a lot of footage for your very first pilot. Just right from the start, it was such an inspirational work. You have just connected with so many people so deeply in teaching us how to live a life worth living.
Thanks, son. It's been my passion. I mean, it ended up being the perfect avenue because it, you know, I love my life and I love seeing other people with their passions. And so many people think that they can't, you know, they have all these reasons in place, you know, to stay in their comfort zone. Well, I can't just quit my job. I can't do this because I don't know anything about it. I can't do this because nobody else does that. No one in my family has done anything like that.
No. Well, maybe it would help if we understand what you mean by passionate.
Passionate meaning being fully engaged with your life, fully 100% engaged. You love what you're doing. And it doesn't mean you're not going to have difficult moments. It doesn't mean you won't go into funks. It doesn't mean there won't be challenges. But overall, for the most part, you're doing what you love. And chances are, if you're doing what you love, that's what you came here to do.
So it's a sign that you're on course.
Yes, exactly. No, and so many people are not doing what they love.
Mostly.
And that's where the problem comes.
It's a very spiritual point of view that you had. And yet, I don't know if you always were a spiritual person or if you arrived at that through experiences.
I think I was the mutant in my family. What do you call it? The other day you gave it the rainbow sheep.
You were the rainbow sheep.
Instead of the black sheep of the family, you're the rainbow sheep. Exactly. You see the possibilities above and beyond what is.
I was the first person in my family on either side to go to college. I put myself through school, and I remember my dad saying, woman going to school, well, maybe you could be a nurse or a secretary. I'm like, what? Really? I don't think so.
And entrepreneur, thanks, Dad.
So is that when you had your first life crisis where you had to figure out what you were going to actually do?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure that out. But I think that's the nature of living a passionate life, is that
it's always fresh.
You're engaged and it's always fresh. You're always doing what you're pulled to do and what you love to do. And I think when you have that entrepreneurial disposition, you need to change it up every so often. Entrepreneurs get bored after a little while.
Right.
So they need to keep changing it up or making it fresh and reinventing it. And that's great because you need to do that for your customers or your clients anyhow.
So we first met you when you were a magazine publisher and you were a mom raising a couple of boys.
Living in L.A.
Right. You had just come to L.A. from New York.
With Stephen Simon, the When Dreams May Come producer. That must have been.
Right. He had actually just finished What Dreams May Come. He had just finished shooting.
Oh, really? Okay. So that was when you entered his movie, just after that. Huh.
That was an amazing process.
And so tell us about the transition of media from the magazine or the published article world into the video world, the world of interviews, and now on the internet.
Like, who was on your list of people to interview?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Through the years, I've interviewed so many extraordinary people who are not only living their passions, but making a difference in the world. And that's really pivotal, because when you go up to somebody and you say, well, what do you love doing? What are you passionate about? It makes for a great interview, because most people light up. But when you ask them, how do you give that back? That's when people really light up.
Yeah.
Living your passion is one thing, but when you give that back to the world, when you mentor somebody else, when you inspire somebody else to live their passion, that's when it goes up to the next level.
Yeah.
And that's what I've consistently found throughout the years, and everyone that we have interviewed across the board. And most people, when they're passionate, they want to use their passions to make a difference in the world around them. They go hand in hand.
Yeah, it brings in more passion, most likely.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they want everyone else to experience it, all their loved ones, people they care about.
Well, let's talk about this a little more after the break. We're talking with Catherine Miller on Passionate Living. Be right back. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Catherine Miller on passionate living and awakening that in others around her and seeing it in others around her. Catherine, for many years, was down in L.A., living in the L.A. film
zone.
World. Zone, right. And you said you came. Yeah, it's
the land of law.
They're supposed to be the city of angels.
Which you, of course, are.
Guys are angels up there in Boulder Creek.
Yeah, well, it's easier up here.
Yeah. Much easier.
You're much more embedded. You're embedded mission in L.A.
Yeah, but you know, Catherine, I would really like to hear a few little reminders of some of the more passionate moments and stories that you covered when you were down there.
Yeah, like Robin Williams. God, I mean, you walked right into meeting him. Was he a passionate man from your experience?
Oh my God, Robin was an amazing human being, and with just a heart of gold. Extraordinarily sensitive and caring and kind, and absolutely a passionate living person. So sad. It's unfortunate, you know, that the depression was such an issue in his life. But everywhere he went, he lit the people up around him just because of how engaged he was with his own life.
And he shared that love with others.
Yeah, he shared it with others. I mean, that's the thing. If there was anyone listening to the show today and they were thinking, well, I don't know how I could live a passionate life, and that's just for somebody else and not me, I would just love to give a few ideas of how to step into that process.
Sure.
That sounds good. You know, I was surprised to find how many people, when you sit next to somebody on an airplane or in a waiting room or wherever you go, and you they ask you what you do and you talk to them, how many times I've run into people and they don't even know what they're passionate about. And it's heartbreaking because they've been on autopilot for so long.
Comfortably numb, I guess you might say.
It's comfortably numb. Working the job, coming home to the family, doing everything
that they think they should do.
And they've gotten so far out of touch with what they really love doing that they don't even know. And if you're at that point, I would suggest a few things. One, tune in to what you loved to do when you were young. And if you can't remember, ask the people around you, what did I do when I was young? What did I love doing? What were the things that lit me up?
You were into model rockets?
Yeah, model rockets. Especially you, Al.
Yeah, I need some passion in my hobbies.
I know that was one of your passions.
Yeah.
Seeing you with your drone the other day.
Yeah, I was thinking of my rockets the other day when my drone crashed. Anyway, this is about you, not me. Where were we?
So just tune in to the things you love. If there was a workshop that you thought about taking or a class or, or things that you thought were interesting, start going down that avenue. And that takes you to the next place. It's just do one thing. I think it's overwhelming a lot of times when someone's coming from a life where they're actually considering doing something that they love. They're like, oh, my God, I can't just quit my job and climb Mount Everest and yada, yada, yada. And it's too traumatic for them. And so it's baby steps, one little baby step. You don't need to make the whole plan. Once you step on that path, it's amazing how the universe just comes in to support you, your higher self, God, whatever we call it.
So what's the hardest part then, asking for what you want or discovering your passion?
It's taking the first step.
Whatever
you know,
it is.
That very first step. Even if it's, I am so stressed out, I can't even think about what I'm passionate about.
Too busy.
Running yourself a bath and taking care of yourself when maybe you're used to taking care of the whole family and putting yourself aside. And self-care is your biggest issue to start to take care of so that you can tap into what you love doing.
Just to create time for yourself to explore the idea.
Right. 1 hour in the evening to close the door, lock it, run a bubble bath, whatever, and give yourself time. Once you've taken the first step, once you've just figured out one little step to take, then it's really important to take the next step. And every day, take a step. Even if it is to research on the internet classes or to find links on a topic that you're interested in or whatever. And just take one step every day. If you can't take a step, take a half a step. But once you start propelling yourself in that direction, a momentum will build, and it'll help to carry you along that path so that you can build up a head of steam and do the larger steps along the way that come to actually living your passion. And then the next thing is stepping through your fears.
And for doing it. I mean, once you make a decision, then you have to, like, the fears come up.
All the fears come up. Every fear you can possibly imagine could come up. Well, what if I climb Mount Everest and I lose my whole family because they give up on me? Or what if there's an avalanche? Or what if this and this and that? And it's amazing.
Yeah, and the danger of being too personal. Can you give us an example from your own life of awakening a passion?
I have friends that they're constantly there. They're like, well, you don't have any fears. It's easy for you. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Every single day of my life, you know. I remember by the time I had started the magazine, I had two little boys that I was single parenting at that point in time. And it was terrifying to leave a job that I knew where I had a steady income to really take a leap of faith.
To run a magazine on
magazine,
your own.
And to run it on my own. I'd never published anything in my life.
And two kids to support that definitely...
Exactly, and it was a total leap of faith, and no family support, and nothing, so it was a total leap of faith.
But it was your passion to do the magazine.
It was totally my passion, and I say that I was quitting every issue for 8 years, you know, we'd finish deadline, it'd be ungodly, you know, 2 days straight without sleep, I'd be like, we'd break even, just pay the bills for the magazine, just pay my bills, I'm like, I'm done. I'm finished with this. And then we get that phone call from some little old lady or some person who's like, my husband's life was saved because we read an article in your magazine and we found this doctor and he figured out what it was. And I'm like, all right, fine, one more issue. We're publishing one more issue for 8 years.
Oh, is it, you mean a labor of love?
It was a total labor of love. Well, which a lot of passions are. Well,
that little thing about the clues, like how do you know when you're getting the affirmation that you need versus when should you heed your experiences as a warning? Like, how do you steer yourself when it's all just following your dream?
Ah, great question. And this is a really important one. I call it navigating the waters because, you know, I grew up in an environment where I thought, all right, you have to will things to happen. You have to make them happen. My grandmother, God bless her, from her German background, you know, was like, all right, you just do it, make it happen, and control everything. And then when I started publishing the magazine, it all changed up on me, and it was like, no, you have to let go of control. I try and push a deadline, and I would never be able to get it done on my own timeline, and the minute I gave up and let go, it would all fall into place. So there's this fine balance of putting the irons in the fire, doing what you have to do to make it happen, and then trusting and listening to the signs.
And it's,
and it requires both. Yeah. It really requires a balance.
It takes both the will, your grandmother, and the letting go and like accepting what is at the same time.
Yeah. And I always joke, I'm like Mr. Magoo. I don't know if you remember that old cartoon where things would be dropping all around him and he'd be oblivious to it. And I'd be like, just send me a sign. And there'd be signs dropping all around me. I'd be oblivious to it at times because I was so focused. And it really does, like I say, require a little of both. If you're trying to do something and trying to will it to happen and it's not happening, clearly there's something in the way. There's something that you haven't got quite right.
Mm. Yeah, what did you have to clear
for your
own success?
Like with the magazine.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the very thing that I just mentioned. Well, I have a great story. Mm-hmm. I was getting ready before we did the Wisdom Pieces, before I met you guys. I was trying to do some filming at one point, and nothing was working. Nothing. You know, I had this young fellow with me who was supposed to be helping to produce, and I stopped by the Yogananda Center, the SRF in the Palisades here.
Mm-hmm. Down in L.A.?
Lake and everything. Yeah, down in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's beautiful.
And I went in, The Lake Shrine, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's it. And I went in, and I said, okay, just send me a sign. And I went and I sat in that little meditation center, and I hear a bird caught up in the hallway, it sounds like. And I'm like, I'm not going to save an animal or a person. I'm always helping everybody. I'm just going to sit here and meditate now. I need my sign. And I got really quiet, and I got, the bird is your message. I'm like, damn it, I knew it. So I went up the stairs, and if you've ever tried to catch a bird, you know, to pick it outside.
Yeah.
It was flying to the window, flying back to the light, and I'm trying to catch it. And here it was, this invisible barrier, and it couldn't understand why it couldn't get out to its friend. So there's the first lesson. Okay, I'm trying to do something. There's some invisible barrier. I can't understand why I can't get this video shoot off. What's going on?
We have about 20 seconds before a break here.
30 seconds,
okay.
Oh, and then I finally get the bird. I'm trying to take him outside to show him the right way, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's listening to the signs. If I would just let this video project go and for the moment and let myself be guided, I'll find my way through. And it did. It happened within a week.
Wow.
So little things like that are the moments of challenges.
Where and trust when you together,
up, it's always somewhere around. It will show up. Someone will show up with the right answer. Some sign will show up.
Say a prayer and wait until a little bird tells you what to do.
Yes,
this,
exactly.
Adorable.
And this works with, this works with others too, right?
Okay, okay. Got to go for a break.
We'll be right back after the break. We'll back Catherine Miller after the CBS News. Welcome back to the Dr. Vichy Show. We're talking to Catherine Miller about passionate living. We do have a question from the audience. How can you stop people from falling in love with you all the time if you're always putting out passion?
What was the question? I didn't.
They want to know how you can stop people
from falling. We've encountered a lot.
How do you stop people from falling? Like, if you're putting out passion all the time and you're a female like yourself, who's quite beautiful, everyone's going to fall in love with you. How do you deal with that is the question.
Mm. Well, you take it as a compliment.
Okay.
And then you redirect.
Redirect is the key, it sounds like.
I call this the thank you and redirect technique.
Thank you and redirect technique. Excellent. This is in the workshop, I gather.
And I think that when people in general are passionate about their lives, they're going to draw in a lot of people.
Yes.
People are drawn to them. And that's what happens with celebrities. What happens when people have the courage to put it out there in the world. Mm. Other people that want to do that are oftentimes drawn to them, and they don't even know why.
It's like
so
a moth to a flame, in a way.
The best thing to do is to utilize this passion to fire them up and say, hey, this is wonderful. I am obviously in a, you know, I'm in a relationship, whatever you use to kind of cut that off. And the redirect is, but I see a light in you. I think you could really do this. Or what is it that you love? And you kind of take that passion or the energy that they're putting toward you and redirect it back within themselves.
Redirect? Or is it more like a flame where you can light someone else?
Well, I guess it would be redirecting that charge to light the flame. the charge that you're getting from them, kind of send it back within.
Yeah, because they think they're falling in love with you, but they're actually falling in love with the passion itself, which is really ultimately most satisfying if it's you're generating it yourself and not have to depend on someone else.
Exactly. So if you can take that spark that they're feeling toward you, and like I say, take it like almost like a mirror and redirect it back into themselves so that it sparks that flame within them, that's how to handle those situations. Usually the most effectively that I've found.
And what about finding true love in your own life?
Finding true love. No, that's a whole different topic.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
yet,
well, okay,
it is
before we go to the
passion.
Before we go to the true love, I mean, I got another question about. I'm a little worried about this forest fire you're starting here. You know. No. Okay. So you redirect it,
forest
and
fire.
Well, I guess it's a some kind of mind fire or being fire, because you redirect it. Someone gets turned on to their passion, and then they probably pass it on to others to turn on their passion, because that's the basic lesson, is to keep on passing the flame, so to speak.
Exactly.
And then before long, you have some kind of massive phenomenon happening.
Right. Yeah, and they've learned an important lesson in the process, because no doubt, once they start getting passionate about whatever it is they love, the same thing is going to happen to them.
Yeah.
So they've kind of learned, oh, I remember she kind of lit that fire in me, and maybe I can use it to light it in somebody else. So that's a great question from that standpoint. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I love what you had mentioned earlier about navigating the waters and such, and knowing when to push and not. You know, there's another really important thing that I learned along the way, and it's to ask for help. I was so proud, and I thought, well, this is my passion. I'm doing this. I shouldn't bother anybody else. And oftentimes, I didn't ask. I just didn't even think about it. And I learned later on, asking for help from the people around you, from God, Spirit, the universe, again, whatever you call that higher being in your life, to ask for help. It's such a simple thing to do, and it's so amazing how often we forget to actually do it.
When you find that you ask for help from the universe, does it come back right away, or does it take its time, or how do you even know it's responding to you?
For me, it happens almost instantly.
Really?
A few days. At least
a lag time. It depends on what you're asking for, I suppose.
I remember one night sitting in the magazine office. This was one of my big reminders, and we were coming up to a deadline, and our editor was such a flake that we had hired the issue before, and now here we were coming into a deadline, and I'm like, God, if you want me to keep publishing this magazine, if you want me to keep doing this, send me an editor. And it was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and I happened to be in the office yet. And the phone rings. And I'm like, huh, that's odd. So I picked up the phone, and it was a fellow that I had met who was an attorney. And he had been kind of going through his own process, you know, where he was thinking about leaving the law field and maybe becoming a healer, kind of going through his own you know,
his own life change point. Yeah.
Figure all this out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I said, so what type in an attorney are you? He said, well, I'm a contract attorney. You know, I read contracts all day long. That's all I do. And I'm like, so you edit, in essence. And he goes, yeah, well, yeah, I guess you could say that. I edit. Yeah. He said, what are you doing right now? Why don't you come over?
You ask the universe for a sign.
come discuss it with me now. Right. So he came over. This was so funny. And I had my right-hand man, Kirby, there. And I said, Kirby, whatever you do, just keep handing him articles as we talk. And so I was talking him through this issue, which I love doing with people.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was doing that, I kept handing him articles and said, do you think you could take a look at this? And best editor, hands down, that ever walked through the door of our magazine.
Wow.
And I'm talking with professional editors who worked at other magazines.
This
man was brilliant. And I was just like, wow. And he helped us for several issues as a volunteer.
Well, I ask you then, if such magic is happening, why would such an endeavor like the magazine close down then and you move on to something else if it was all this magic was happening?
It was time. At the time we were getting ready to launch the new publication, 9/11 happened.
Wow.
And the bottom fell out of the advertising industry overnight. And that was with all mediums, you know, from television to radio to print.
Everyone stopped advertising?
Yeah, people got scared. for a short period of time, for a few months there, but everybody suffered as a result. Mm-hmm. But we were in between publishing. We were changing titles. We were going to do a total relaunch, and we got caught in between. Mm-hmm. And all of our consultants were like, you know, no, don't do it, don't do it. You'll take a bath. And print never really fully came back from that. There's still print publications all the time going up because the Internet was also becoming a bigger thing at the time.
Sure, at the very beginning of it.
And in all honesty, at the time, I was absolutely devastated. Mm-hmm. But it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because we went on to do the television pieces. We went on to do consulting work. I made way more money. I had a whole lot more fun. And my body was burning out. I got like chronic fatigue for a period of time after that, you know, for about 6 months, where I was really just, my body was so exhausted and I didn't even realize it. I just kept going and going and going.
So you went,
it was a gift from the universe.
Nice. So you left LA and chilled out in Santa Barbara a little bit more from.
Yeah. And oh my God, I love Santa Barbara. Yeah. You can swoop down to LA and swoop out again and you're not in the traffic all the time and the mayhem down there.
Yeah, I always loved Santa Barbara.
I love LA, but I like visiting it.
Yeah. Now, I was a kid in Santa Barbara, you know, myself. I had a very positive imprint of Santa Barbara as a fifth and sixth grader.
Wow.
Best time to bicycles, the whole thing. Yeah, the hard part for me was going from Santa Barbara to Philadelphia. But that's another story. Yeah, that's.
I'll bet you did. It must have been like culture shock.
Yeah, you could say that. It was kind of training in the long run. I'm very happy I spent time in Philadelphia. But I wouldn't have chosen it, you know.
I go back and forth between Buffalo and the West Coast.
That's quite a commute.
That's true. You are East Coast, Left Coast. Wow. And why Buffalo? Because it's your family's from there?
It's my hometown, and it's having a big resurgence right now, and I love being a part of influencing the community there. I love bringing things from the West Coast back to my hometown, and I do a lot of work in New York, so I'll go to Buffalo in between, and it's just wonderful to be there now.
So Buffalo, Manhattan, and
Buffalo,
California.
Manhattan, Santa Barbara. Kind of the little circle.
And now where are you now?
Right now I'm in Phoenix doing a quick little job, and then I head to New York tomorrow to do another consulting job on a really cool project there.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah. One more thing to tie up passionate living.
Yes.
The final piece when you're living your passions, when you're on that path, is giving back. And like we talked about in the beginning when we interview people and that's where they really lit up, that's where the juice really happens. Whatever joy you have in life, whatever pinnacle you think you've reached in living your passions, when you actually go for it and do it, oh my God, giving back takes you to a whole other level. That's what it's all about.
I say it sustains the flame, huh? Keeps it going.
It does. It does. It keeps it going, and you're giving it to others and passing it on. Mm. And when we talk about the future and what's ahead, and we live in this world now where our youth are all escaping in video games, and they're not living their passions in this lifetime necessarily. They're oftentimes escaping. And then they're going off to college and they're trying to figure out what degree to take before they even have lived, before they know what they want to do. Because their family's like, well, it's good to be a lawyer, good to be a doctor, good to be this, good to be that. And they don't even know what they're passionate about yet. And I always tell young people, if you love doing something, find a mentor. Find somewhere where you can go and work for free and give it away and just take that wisdom in. See if this is something you really want to do before you go off to college. Or
try it out.
College and take a liberal arts degree for the first year or two and take every course you can possibly take and see what lights you up.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we got to go to a break.
It's so important. Okay.
We'll be back after the break. We're talking to Catherine Miller about Passionate Living and the Dr. Future Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Catherine Miller about passionate living. I really like the last line in your mission statement here in Passionate Living. Passions is what resonates so perfectly within our soul that we can accept nothing else in our lives. Nothing else.
Mm. Yeah. That's a danger. Once you step on that path, there's no going back.
So due warning here. This is choosing.
The warning label.
Yeah. You're surrendering into the unknown in a way. But you trust, though, right? You trust that there's a higher force, if you will, that's keeping everything together? I mean, what is it? Something?
You believe? Whatever. I just know that when you step on that path of doing what you came here to do,
doing what you came here to do,
whatever it is you love,
So it could be nature, God, goddess, all that is.
Yeah, whatever. Once you get that light, that spark within you, and you fan it, and it turns into a flame, there's no going back. I mean, you can try to go back to a comfortable, to-date life, but it won't work anymore. You won't be able to accept anything less than an amazing existence. And you want to, like I say, you want to change the world around you. You want to give it back. You just become lit up. Again, there is a trust because, again, once you take on that path, it's amazing how the universe just conspires to support you. You'll meet the right people, the doors will open. You know how that magic happens.
Now, why do you think that is? Do you think it's because it's maybe a living thing? The universe is alive, perhaps? The shamanic truth of that? Or
I don't know if it's something that we have in our resonance field, even.
When you ask for what you want.
Yeah, and you create those people around you, you draw them in.
Well, that's true. I was going to ask you about that. When you're coming from a passionate state, you're going to attract different people around you than you might normally.
Oh, completely different people. Your whole friend group will change. Oh, a big thing. When you go on this path of passion, when you start to follow your dreams and do the things that you love, sometimes there's this thing called friend fasting. You know, the friends that you have that are like, oh, why are you going to do that? You'll just fail. That won't be any good. You know, or even family members. Yeah. And those are the people that you lovingly say, hey, I'm going to do this. And if you can't be a positive support right now, I don't need anyone pulling me down. I may need to take some space for you. So,
and that's totally the way to deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Clear your field of anybody who's going to pull you down in that time.
So you call it friend shifting?
I call it friend fasting.
Friend fasting.
I take a fast from those friends. Yeah.
Friend fasting. I say, oh, very kind. That's very nice. I'll see you at the end of my fast.
At the end of this fast, we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
I'll be lit up. Maybe it'll light you up. Yeah.
So,
I was in the new fest. Yeah.
I wanted to just take a moment and let you tell us about some of the ways that people could get involved with Passionate Living in terms of things that you have available in the next little while.
I understand you're doing a workshop of some sort along these lines?
Yes, actually. The new website, we have passionateliving.com is up, but the new website will be up in about 2 weeks, so keep coming back. Stay tuned.
I'll put a link on the Dr. Vision
now, but in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be amazing.
Oh, here it is.
And then we also have another workshop that we're launching. I'm launching it with a girlfriend of mine, a series of classes, and it's called Sensual Intelligence. Yes, and the whole premise is that we take in the entire world around us through our senses. Every experience that we have is taken in through all of our senses. And there are more than five senses, by the way. That's a big thing in science now.
Like intuition?
Like 14, there's spatial sense, there's a time sense, there's all of these different senses that we have in our body, in our being. And a lot of times we take in the experience unconsciously. Like say there's a smell that reminds you of something from childhood. Mm. It could be fresh baked cookies and grandma made them and it makes you happy. Or it could be a smell of mustiness that reminded you of that dark, murky basement you had to walk into as a child to go get wood or something, and it always scared you. And suddenly you feel some anxiety in your chest, and you don't even know why. Mm. And we're so used to turning off our senses when we get bombarded and overwhelmed.
So we've turned them down, and you're saying we can turn the volume up on them and experience a much more rich reality.
Yes, we can turn the volume up. We can become aware of the senses. We can learn techniques and how to navigate them and how to use our senses to enhance life.
Like, let's take smell, for example.
React from it.
How could you enhance smell a little bit more, for example?
Well, the first step, obviously, is awareness. And we have, like you say, a whole bunch of exercises that we'll be sharing to tune people in again to that awareness. And then what to do when you smell something that brings something up within your system, how do you work with that and actually shift that as an experience so that next time you have that smell, it doesn't affect you in the same way.
Hmm.
So we have a whole bunch of tools we'll be sharing in relation to that. So it's really how to use your senses.
Okay, well, another question I have is that...
Instead of just reacting from it subconsciously, unconsciously.
Yeah. How do you work
also
with...
also sexually, that's our final class.
Okay, well, I want to ask you about...
sexuality.
Because if you can enhance sexuality, okay. Now, we're talking about the internet here, right?
I mean, yeah, this all is of a, this information
this
is presented
all internet
live
class.
Over the internet,
yeah,
right?
Internet training. And do you have interactive sensuality over the internet on this show or in the program? And if so, what kind? Do you use the
I
new
think
USB?
Other website, I think you could go to other websites for that.
Well,
it might be sexuality versus sensuality.
Why not? Well, there is that danger on the internet. We do have that, you know.
Well,
but still, sensual is good, right? Figuring out how to use this technology properly.
Right. Well, there's four classes. The fourth class has to do with transcendent sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it's how you create a new experience with your partner in your sexual relationship that can be more enhancing and actually where it tunes you into a higher force. Again, whatever we call that, the universe.
A connection to the divine and a key to awakening the God-Goddess within us.
Right. Oh, man, see how you said that? Okay, you're going to be teaching the fourth one with us, obviously.
No, it wasn't me.
That was class.
Sweetheart, that's your words. I was just reading.
Well,
I do. I add a little life to it. You know, their words are there to help us do these things, right?
Roll off your tongue.
Speaking of words that roll off your tongue, we have a caller who probably has a few words.
Somebody in the hospital?
To roll off his tongue. Yes. No,
somebody in a bed in the hospital.
We are very familiar with, a friend of ours for a long time.
He's a regular. He calls
him. A regular, almost famous artist, and definitely a passionate living person himself. John Monahan, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello there. I wanted to thank you for being on every week, and I really enjoy it.
Did you hear from Kat? Were you able to catch Catherine today? Did you have something you wanted to ask about passionate living?
Yes, passionate living. When looking back on it, I decided around 1968 to be free as possible, and I wound up helping the magical, what do they call themselves?
In San Francisco?
Yeah, what was the name of the people that rode on the bus?
Oh, the Merry Pranksters.
The Merry Pranksters. I was actually helping them with their work.
You went from
the very last day I was there.
That's right. You were Marine Corps, from the Marine Corps to working with the Merry Pranksters.
Marine Corps Reserve.
Quite a story.
I didn't have to spend an excessive amount of time.
Yeah, that is shifting towards more of a passion. I'd say embracing the 60s revolution.
Well, no,
as
a matter of fact, I did take passion. I took it with a grain of salt, you know.
And so no regrets, John, looking back?
Maybe think I had been in previous armies, you know, like, well, for instance, Charlemagne or Alexander the Great or other interesting characters. When I was about 9, my parents gave me something for Christmas. Was a bicycle, right?
Mm.
They said, what would you like, a bicycle or an encyclopedia? And I said, I want an encyclopedia.
Hey, passion is in the eye of the beholder,
Listen, we only got a couple more minutes with Catherine. We got to find out more about her workshop. Thank you for calling, John. Appreciate your attention.
Yeah,
thanks,
John.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure to hear your exploits in passionate living. Appreciate that.
You know, with what John said, it brought something up. You know, the 60s and the 70s were such rich times, especially for young people. There was so much to be engaged in. And when we think about the future, technologically, and you're so tuned into this, Alan, I mean, we're getting to a point, you were showing me how I could look through those glasses and see in
that's
an
Google
art gallery.
Glass, Not actually
we're getting to such a point where that world, you can actually step into it, and it could be very easy to forget to come back a time.
Yes, it's true.
And
it's true.
As we head into the future, we're all so tethered to our computers, to our cell phones, to our emails. And I think that one of the things as we move into the future for our children is to unplug the technology every day. Make a couple hours a day to go out into nature, to do something where you leave the phone behind, you go out biking, you do something physical, and just
stretching on the deck.
Yeah. Yeah. because otherwise we're going to be further and further and further away from it.
Yeah, don't leave really your body behind. Right, don't leave your body behind.
Mm-hmm.
I get the lawnmower man. Poor guy left it behind and it just disappeared. Is sad, as I said. Yes, we should have a healthy, and the body's the key to ecstatic, blissful experiences too. So,
exactly.
Don't leave that behind.
We don't have to live them. Yeah, we don't have to live them in these virtual worlds. We can actually be living these lives for real. Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of young people are hopeless.
Yeah.
And get frustrated, and they don't know an avenue.
That's it. Well, that's a whole show in and of itself, just thinking about that. But thanks for
Yeah,
we got to go now. But thank you so much, Catherine, for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, guys, on the show. I just love it. Thank you so much.
PassionateLiving.com, Catherine Miller. Thanks so much. This is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO.
And for more information about the online Power of Sensuality workshop with Catherine Miller and Dawn Marie Jordan, go to 4sensualintelligence.com. That's the numeral 4sensual, S-E-N-S-U-A-L, intelligence.com. That includes 4 sessions: November 2nd, Waking Up Your Senses; November 9th, Creating a Sensual Abode; November 16th, Social Mastery Through Senses; and November 23rd, Transcendent Sex.